MMA Roadshow, episode number 222. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me this week. I am here at home in Las Vegas, enjoying a beautiful June afternoon in Sin City. Meanwhile, Cole Coffee is back up in his hometown, Columbus, Ohio, enjoying a little bit of vacation time. You actually get a little bit of time off in this job every now and then, so he's enjoying that. But he's still going to be on the grind. He's still going to edit this all together when we get done recording. Cole Coffee will still be the man responsible for getting it up on the internet. So you know how we do. Just because somebody takes some time off, we don't stop. We have delivered 222 consecutive weeks of the MMA Roadshow. That's how we do. Listen, Cole Coffee probably needed a week off after dealing with Bare Knuckle FC6. Of course, he covered that down in Florida last week. And certainly the stories that he regaled me of afterwards were much of what you would expect. I mean, not all bad. Of course, it was quite the show. Everybody was really into Paulie Malignaggi and Artem Lobov. But boxing events just as a whole, it's interesting. It's just a different feel. It's the way it's handled. It's more chaotic. It's more stressful as a media member, to be honest. I mean, I guess that's what you do week in and week out. You get used to it, but it's incredible how different the sports are. You know, Oscar Willis, of course, our good friend from the Mac Life, who's really doing a lot covering both sports right now. He's a great one to talk to about it as well, because he's kind of got a foot in both worlds. And you know, he constantly, just after the boxing events, it's kind of comes back. There's not the organization. There's not the organized scrums where everybody kind of looks out for each other and understands we need some space, and you know, kind of everybody kind of works together to make sure everybody's okay. It's more just chaos. So it's a lot more stressful. And of course, when you're a small organization like Bare Knuckle is, you know, you're trying to do things on a budget. I mean, you know, you're trying to keep your expenditures to a minimum. And of course, you just don't have the experience. You know, I think, you know, say what you will about the UFC, but the UFC machine is a well-oiled machine, man. They do so many events that they've got it down to a science. And when you're still kind of new at doing the whole live event production thing, and you're trying to do it on a budget as well, it makes things even more chaotic than they normally are from a boxing perspective. And of course, that's kind of what you got going on with Bare Knuckle right now. You know, it's little things that just seem like minor details, but they end up being a big deal. Their press conferences, for instance, if you watch any of the press conferences, either pre or post, from us, from, you know, Cole Coffee down at down there, or any of the other organizations, you probably noticed that the audio from the press conference sucked. And that's because they had no audio box in the back for the cameras to plug into to get clean audio. And so, you know, it seems like a small thing, like, well, it's no big deal, we'll just have room audio, but it just makes the product look like crap. I mean, everybody did the best they could, but it makes the product a little bit lower. And I'm not trying to rag on them. I understand. Like I said, it's BKFC 6, man. They're just getting started. And if you think back to UFC 6, they were making the same kind of mistakes and that sort of thing. But it's what you see that these organizations have to get over. I think there was a story that their videographer, you know, they're trying to save a little bit of money. Again, understandable. So they didn't bring their videographer down to film the press conference. So, you know, they realized it kind of midstream, like, oh God, we're going to have a press conference and we won't even have the footage to use. So they hired a local guy, and the local guy ended up not being extremely qualified and ended up not capturing the footage. So, you know, they take the time to hold this pre-fight press conference down there in Florida, and then they don't even have the footage to use. You know, us websites did, but they didn't. So, you know, you could just imagine. It's growing pains, man. It really is. But when you're in it and you're trying to work in it, it can be a little bit maddening. And, you know, I mean, we spend money to go cover those events, and it's constantly in the back of your head. You know, am I earning my keep, so to speak? You know, am I making these expenditures worth it? So a little bit of a headache, and I'm sure Cole Coffee is happy to have a few days off now after dealing with the chaos. I will say, by the way, for anybody that heard us talking about the event, you know, a couple weeks ago, I think, when we really got into it, speaking of, Oscar Willis was there. I think that may have been the day we'd had a lot of frosty beverages. But I think we broke down that fight. I think we had a pretty good read on Lobov Malignaggi. You know, when we broke it down, at least I feel confident that, you know, I had a pretty good read on what we were going to see. You know, that if it was a regular boxing match, Paulie would definitely win. And, of course, he did box early, but you know, eventually he'd probably break a hand and he would shut down. That's exactly what happened. Pauly broke his hand and he shut down, and Artem kept going. So I feel like we had a pretty good read on what it was going to be. I watched the fight. I was actually at B Dubs. No shocker there, if you know me. I was at Buffalo Wild Wings, and I actually watched it there on my phone. And so I couldn't really hear the audio because it was pretty loud in there. There were some other sports on. But I watched it live, and I had it 3-2 for Artem. I had Artem winning rounds 3, 4, and 5, with Pauly winning the first two. So I actually scored it the exact same way the judges did, so I didn't have a problem with the decision at all. And like I said, I felt like the fight played out kind of exactly the way we thought it would. It's a different sport. I mean, it's kind of a sport unto itself. And for that reason, I think that's why the MMA fighters are doing well in it right now. And pure boxers, I think, may continue to struggle, and that may prove Pauly's performance may, you know, I don't want to say, you know, cause other boxers to not want to do it. I don't think many of them want to do it anyway. But it may give them a little bit of hesitation. So, I thought, I will say this. I was a little surprised at the refereeing too. You know, you heard Artem talk about being surprised that he didn't get to clinch longer than he thought he would. I had the exact same reaction, man. When he first tried to clinch in that first round and they separated him like immediately, I thought, oh no, this is not going to be good. And, you know, you're supposed to be able to work from the clinch. So, at least that's my understanding, is that you're supposed to be able to, as long as you're punching, you know, you're supposed to be able to work from the clinch. And I think that threw him off his game for a little bit. So I had the same reaction Artem did, but ultimately he got the job done. And good for Artem, man. He's a good dude. I think anybody that's been listening to this show knows our feelings on Artem, man. He's just a good dude. He gets it, man. He's not necessarily the greatest fighter you've ever seen, but he sure as hell will go out and do it. You know what I mean? So, much respect to him. He's willing to put on a show. He is the definition of a prize fighter. And I enjoyed seeing him get the win. I know that meant a lot to him. So now the only question is, I just don't know where bare knuckle goes from here. I mean, Jason Knight versus Leonard Garcia is their next main event, and I'm sure it's going to be a great fight, man. Those two dudes love to scrap. Two dudes that are going to throw down. But I mean, I don't think it's the fighting that really drove this whole thing. It was the rivalry, right? It was the Pauly versus Artem rivalry. It was all the heat. That's what it was about. And of course, you know, dating back all the way to Conor McGregor, his involvement, you know, Pauly Malignaggi and that whole thing with the sparring situation. I mean, this has been a big rivalry. And kudos to Bare Knuckle for being able to get Pauly in there to do this, man. I mean, and hell, all you can say, much respect to Pauly for jumping in there and doing a bare knuckle fight. You know, this is not something that he had trained for or was ready for. So I just don't know where they go from here. I don't know what kind of fan interest Knight versus Garcia is going to drive. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. That's all I'll say. I mean, I don't have a vested interest in it one way or the other. I don't hate the sport. I don't think it's the next great sport either. It doesn't. I'm not one of those people that says, "Oh, it's way too brutal, man. They can't be doing this." It does seem, that you get cut up and your hands break. I mean, so from that perspective, it doesn't. It does seem like it does a lot of at least visual damage. You know, scars and broken hands and that sort of thing. I don't know that it's any more dangerous than boxing or MMA for that matter. I mean, you can't throw the punches to the head at full speed because you end up breaking your hand. So in that way, maybe it's actually a little bit safer. I mean, you don't have as many just straight concussive blows. You know, I don't know. I won't pretend to say I have some kind of scientific study on it one way or the other. But I'm not in the camp that it's, you know, oh, this is way too brutal for me. But I'm also not in the camp of saying, yeah, you know, this is the next great combat sport. This is gonna evolve the way we look at combat sports. I don't know, man. I think the blood and the bare knuckle style of it, I think it's going to bother a lot of people. I will say the 2-minute rounds, man, dude, you got to work. You got to get out there. It's amazing how much just trimming from a 3-minute round to a 2-minute round changes things. Of course, you know, I do commentary for Tough Enough, which is an amateur mixed martial arts organization in Vegas. And in the amateur ranks, they do 2-minute rounds. So I had some experience with fights with 2-minute rounds, and it is true. I mean, you got to go, but it didn't dawn on me how big of a change from 3 to 2 would really be. But you got to get busy, man. You don't have much time to set stuff up in there. So anyway, but listen, Saying all that, hey, that's what we're leading off the show with, is talking about bare knuckle. And I can tell you from a website operator's perspective, the traffic last week, even though there was a Bellator and even though there was a UFC, was all about bare knuckle, man. So for at least this weekend, man, they definitely had everybody's attention. I think that rivalry had a huge part to do with it. So we'll see what happens from there. All right, listen, I did not go to Florida, but I did go to Dana White's Contender Series on Tuesday night. The second one of Season 3 is in the books. By the way, myself and Dan Tom, we're doing a pre-show at the UFC Apex every week this year. The UFC has allowed us to do that. Just something fun for us to do, you know, trying to change things up a little bit, have some fun. I think actually, you know, we've been in talks. We wanted to get all the bugs and the kinks worked out and make sure we knew what was going on, but that, you know, Dana may stop by one of those. Maybe we can get a matchmaker in there. Who knows? You know, that we'll try to get some guests on there. The first 2 weeks it's just been myself and Dan Tom. Just a half hour. We're going from 4:15 to 4:45 local, that is Pacific time. Just kind of previewing the card for you a little bit, trying to give you a little bit of insight on what you might be seeing that night. So if you're a fan of the Contender Series, make sure you tune into those every week. Cole Coffey is doing a good job, man. Of course, he's filming them, but during this live stream, he's also teeing up some video to roll in, some B-roll, that sort of thing. So, I mean, Cole Coffey is basically producing this thing as a TV show on the fly, you know, and he's been working with the UFC to collect some of the pre-fight packages, some videos. Of course, he shoots the weigh-ins the previous day too, so he's rolling in this footage that he's collecting. So it's really been a Cole Coffey project. I mean, Dan Tom and I are the ones that are on camera, but Cole Coffey really the driving force behind the scenes. So definitely, if you're interested, check it out, man. We've had fun doing them. They are live, and again, I mean, it's basically Cole Coffey producing live TV. By the way, I should say Nolan King. We want to get him. We want to get some film segments. We got to get him a camera. He doesn't have a camera up there where he lives, up in Massachusetts, I believe, if I'm right. I know he's up there in the Northeast. Apologies, Nolan. I know you're up there somewhere. but we want to get him. But he's been providing some insight as well. I've been hitting him up every week and just saying, hey, man, I know that you're into the Contender Series. Who you got your eye on? You know, which are the top prospects that you're looking at? We've been kind of mentioning those in. So if you haven't checked out those pre-shows, check them out, man. I think they're kind of fun. Yeah, so that was just a big commercial for me, basically. but listen, the second week of the Contender Series was an interesting week. No finishes. First time in Dana White's Contender Series history, there were no finishes on the card. It was all decisions, which is not what we're used to seeing on the Contender Series. Man, we've had some crazy knockouts, crazy finishes on the Contender Series. So it's a little bit different. As far as the UFC Apex, much better experience the second week around. The first week, they didn't play the packages, the pre-fight packages and stuff in-house. So there was a lot of just kind of sitting around and waiting because while all that stuff was rolling on your ESPN Plus stream, we were just kind of sitting there in silence. They also added some music, like they're real low, not like loud like they have at a UFC event, but just some music in between fights to kind of keep a little bit of atmosphere in there. So it was a much better viewing experience, I'll say that, live. It is weird how quiet it is in there. You know, the Tough Gym didn't have a lot of people in it, but because it was just kind of, you know, this metal warehouse gym, I think there was just a sort of sound to it. And the Apex is set up to be such a technologically advanced film studio, basically, that there's dampening, you know, there's noise dampening stuff all over the walls and the ceiling and that sort of thing. So it does its job. I mean, it's an incredible TV facility, but it is eerily quiet because that stuff absorbs so much sound. So it's really, really quiet in there. The cheers that you do hear definitely stand out. And I think the crowd was a little bit more vocal this time around. So a much better live viewing experience. I still don't know, and I've had a couple of people ask me, and I feel bad because I don't know exactly how to answer it. You know, Dana that first week said, you know, hey, come on out, man. We'll, you know, we'll let people come in, that sort of thing. But there's still only seating for about 200 people in there. And I don't know how they're going to limit who comes in there. And they've got security outside. There's, you know, they basically barricaded off one of the entrances, and the other entrance where you go in, there's security. And I don't know how they're limiting who gets in, how many get in, that sort of thing. So I hate to say, I don't know exactly. I think they're still trying to figure it out. Hopefully we'll know a little bit more next time out. But you know, they can expand that thing up to 1,500, and if they, but I don't think they want to lay in all the seats and then have it empty. So I'm not sure what the plan is. But if you're in Vegas, hopefully you can make it out, because it is cool to see the new facility, man. It's really cool inside. When you first walk in, it's really cool. They got all the belts from the brands that Zuffa owns. So when you first walk in, there's, you know, a really, really old UFC belt, like one of the original ones. You know, then the old UFC belt, and then the new UFC belt. But then you've got two kinds of Strikeforce belts there. You got WC belts, Pride belts. So it's pretty cool to see all of them up there. But the fights themselves, it was a weird week. And you know, I think a lot of people were thinking, gosh, you know, I know that the media after it was over, you know, oh, gosh, who do you go with? You know, is it possibly goes with nobody? And Dana ended up taking Miguel Baeza and Miles Johns, which I thought were good picks, to be honest with you. I think Miguel Baeza kind of already started with one foot in the UFC. And, you know, to take a last-minute opponent switch is one thing. To take a last-minute opponent switch where your opponent also goes from orthodox to southpaw, that's another thing, right? That totally complicates everything. You know, you're training for one stance, and then you get the other, man, that changes the game. But then on top of that, for your opponent to miss weight by 7 pounds, you know, Victor Reyna came in at 138 pounds. To miss weight by that much, and for Miguel Baeza to just say, don't care. Don't care one bit, we're going to do this. I think that earns you a lot of respect from the matchmakers, from UFC President Dana White. And so I think he already had that on his side. And then to on top of that, go out and have a great performance in just an absolute dogfight. I thought that was a good decision. And, you know, great performance by Miguel Baeza. That's a big dude, by the way, man. He's got some size to him, man. I think he's got some talent, and he's got some real size to him. So I'm anxious to see how he performs in the UFC. Meanwhile, Miles Johns, you know, again, I'm always a little bit biased. Fortis MMA product, Dallas, Texas. I love the crew at Fortis, man. I mean, they're a great, great team, and I love seeing MMA thriving in my hometown of Dallas, so I'm always particularly high on those guys. But they just deserve the recognition. What Say So has done, I think a lot of people are really starting to see, you know, firsthand how effective he is as a coach. And it was funny in the pre-show where you're saying, hey, if for whatever reason this fight ends up being not exciting, make sure you're listening to Safe. And they featured him pretty loud. You can't not hear his voice, man. He is one of the most intense, loud, just, you know, demanding coaches you'll ever have, but certainly one of the best in the game. So I thought those two were the right ones to get in. And you know, Dana White kind of addressed it all. In fact, let's just do that. We had a chance afterwards to speak to UFC President Dana White. We talked to him about, you know, why he picked the guys he did, and of course, you know, we had to follow up on Brendan Loughnane after the decision was made last week. You know, it became one of the biggest stories in MMA. It was crazy. I think it was Simon Head that was saying this. I mean, how wild is it that last week probably the two most talked about names in mixed martial arts were Brendan Loughnane and Artem Lobov, and can't disagree with him there. So, yeah, let's hear from UFC President Dana White.
Dana, you called it an interesting night. You know, five decisions, not necessarily bad fights, but five decisions. So, I mean, what was it like? Because I know you want that highlight reel moment.
Yeah. Well, listen, you can't have that. You can't always have that. The first two seasons of this thing were fucking ridiculous. I mean, it's. That doesn't happen. It's crazy the way that this played out the first two seasons. But good fights, really fucking good matchmaking. Really good matchmaking. I mean, you want to see how good these guys really are. The way these fights were made were great. And you got to see some good stuff. I mean, this kid, Miguel, that fight was awesome, right? And Victor didn't come to lose. He came to win. I mean, this kid got hit with everything. Get dropped, kept getting up, kept coming. And when you're in this type of a position for the first time, there's an adrenaline dump. There's, you know, the nerves and all the things that come along with it is something that you have to factor in when you're watching these guys. And I was super impressed with these guys tonight.
With Miguel especially, I was wondering, I mean, it was a great fight, but I wonder how much it went into your decision that he fought a guy that was 7 pounds heavy. I mean, that's not even close. So did he kind of go in with like some bonus points in your eyes?
So, lost, had a new opponent 11 days out, right? So a new guy that they don't know and comes in. He's a southpaw, which is horrible, right? You haven't been sparring or training for southpaws or anything like that. Then the guy shows up and he's overweight and you still accept the fight. Then the guy comes in tonight and doesn't want to fucking leave. He's here to win and not quit. I mean, the kid couldn't have stacked the deck any higher against himself, and he still pulls off the win. He still looked good. His stand-up, his clinch work, his ground game, and his composure, how he took his time with everything. He didn't rush and go crazy, and I think that the kid has a lot of talent, and I think he's got a bright future in the sport.
With Miles Johns, I mean, you referenced his coach, Saif Sud, you know, yelling, quit wrestling, Kareza.
Screaming at him nonstop. Yeah. Don't go to the ground.
I wonder, I mean, obviously we know you're looking for all action fights, right? But are you worried at all that, like, I mean, it was almost like he was coaching him into bad positions where maybe he could have won the fight on the ground. Do you worry that, like, people are going to take these fights differently than they should?
No, if you're the coach, you don't want him going to the ground. That guy's got 100% finish rate on the ground. Why play into his strengths when you can stand up and stay where he's the weakest? You know what I mean? I completely agree with the coach, but I love the fact that he went on the ground, because if he didn't, I don't know what he's got against a guy like that. The fact that this guy has 100% finish rate and he had no respect for that, dove right in there and didn't get submitted by him, actually controlled everything on the ground most of the time that he was down there. Guy's a savage. I think that guy seriously has a future in the sport.
The feature fight with Johnson, you said he's one, you know, you love his style, but how hard is it to pass on a guy if you say, like, I love this style, but he didn't show me enough tonight?
There's a couple things. So the guy's 36 years old, number one. Number two, I like the way he fights and everything else, but on his side, Cunningham, once he got hurt and saw the power that this kid had, he just wanted to survive. He wanted to get through three rounds, right? But at the same time, every time that the ref would split them, he would take one step off the cage. He never tried to get in the middle and control the octagon so that he couldn't get pressed back up against the fence. There were a lot of things that he could have done too that would have probably changed my mind.
Last thing for me, you took a lot of criticism, obviously, after the last week. I know you were in China, but it was a huge story, you know, the Lockman situation and not giving that contract. I just wonder, did you talk to the matchmakers at all about maybe finding them another spot? Or do you, in hindsight, do you regret, no, you know, making that decision?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that everybody knows what I'm looking for here. And while I said that kid is talented and, you know, he's going to – and I also said, if I'm wrong – he's a free agent and anybody can pick him up. So if anybody thinks I'm wrong, show me. Show me that I'm wrong. And you know, what better position could you be in than a kid, you know, coming off the show, he wins, and people think that I made the wrong choice. So if that's the case, there you go. There's a free one for you. Lock him up and he's all yours. I'm looking for guys that when you show up here, we all know what this show is about. This show isn't about isn't the ultimate fighter and you're going to win, you know, you fight all these times and you win a contract. This isn't a fight night or a pay-per-view and stuff like that. I have five fights, and I have to pick somebody who I think can come into the UFC, make a huge impact, break into the top five, or be a world champion. That's what I'm looking for. And it was a dog fight. Love that fight. It was a great fight. Both kids put on a good fight. And there's 10 seconds left of the fight, and you're going to shoot? If he fucking wung it out at the end of the 10 round, at the end of the 10 seconds, I probably would have picked him. I'm looking for different things on this show. I'm not looking for what the sport is or what the UFC, how you call a fight in the UFC or judge a fight. It's not what I'm looking for here. And this is the second time, I'm sorry, you tried to ask me a question three times. And this is the second time this season that the, you know, whether it's Bisbing or whoever, didn't have the same picks that I had. That kid Kyle. Kyle's super talented. Kyle's 26 years old, okay? He's 26 years old. He had the mount and didn't really land any damaging punches from the top. He's 26 years old. The guy's a baby. He's not even in his prime till he's 28, 29. He's got 2 years to work on all these things, and he's undefeated. What I don't want to do is bring him in early put him in against some animal that's in the UFC who gets that top position on him and rains down on him because he couldn't stop somebody from the mount. It's just, I think that he has things to work on. I think he's got plenty of time, and I think he has huge potential in the future.
Sir, if a fighter misses weight on Contender Series and the fight still goes ahead, would they be eligible to potentially earn a contract or just their opponent?
It's a good question. It's actually a great question. If you look at that kid that missed weight tonight, right, and you look at the type of fighter he is, the shots that he took and got back up, the body, anybody who's involved in fighting and is really involved in fighting has been fighting before. And you take a body shot like that, and he knew that if he didn't get up, I guarantee you he didn't want to get up, but he got up. I don't know. There's things like that that you look at, and everybody messes up, and he had 11 days notice. And the thing that pisses the matchmakers off is he had 11 days notice. Sounds like a great excuse, but they had three other guys that they could have picked that would have made weight. And that's what drives everybody crazy and pisses everybody off. But when you see a guy fight like he fought tonight, if he pulled that win off and won, it'd be hard to say no.
Have you ever considered having alternates on deck in the event that somebody has to pull out?
Well, unfortunately, we've never had to have that. You know, we've never been in that situation until this season. So, no, we haven't, but yeah, we probably should.
Dana, can you talk about basically fighters giving you what you want versus just surviving the fight and trying to win?
Yeah, I mean, like I've been saying, that's not what we're looking for here. I'm not looking for guys to survive. Like this kid. I mean, you heard me say it. Yeah, but I got to look at his stats. Justin Gonzalez, right? Mm-hmm. I was so excited for this fight. So this kid, I don't ever count amateur fights ever. This kid's 19-0 with amateur fights. You got to count him. And if you look at his opponents' records are 52-15. You never see that, right? So I'm so excited for this fight. Then you look at his finish rate, it's non-existent, his finish rate, and you see why when you see the fight. The kid is an awesome wrestler, and he can control you and pin you. I saw opportunities where he could have took the back so many times. He actually had the choke in, but only had one hook in at one point, and, you know, wasn't really, he was very comfortable in staying where he felt safe, not being aggressive and trying to finish the fight. And you can get away with that for a while. Then once you start to go up the ranks in the UFC, you can't be that one-dimensional and get away with that. You just, no, it's not what I'm looking for.
Dana, you explained tonight the matchmaking and the contract situation, but let me ask you, has there ever been a night that you've been close to saying, you know what, maybe no contracts tonight, and would you be opposed to that maybe in the future should the situation maybe call for it?
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet. But yeah, I mean, hopefully it doesn't happen. It's a bad night if we don't give out a contract. But yeah, it could happen. It could definitely happen.
It's still early in the season. Last season we saw a couple of times where guys were given either a developmental contract or told they're going to come back later on in the season. Is that still on the table for this year as well?
Yeah, we could do that still. I just, you know, like that kid Kyle that I talked about a minute ago, He's with a good team. There's nothing about that guy's game that I say, oh, we need to bring him into a new camp and do this. He's with a good team. He's young. He's super talented, and he's going to do just fine. He just needs some more work, and I don't want to bring him in too early. There's no need for it.
Yeah, just a general question. Is there a standard Contender Series contract that these guys get when they win, or do they win and then you negotiate a contract individually?
Yeah, so they get. I don't know how the contracts are done. I don't know how they do it, but the matchmakers sign a deal with them. Yeah.
And then Dan, one last question. As far as Cunningham, I know that he fought last year and last season, and then now coming back this year. Did you see any improvements, or what were Cunningham in the last fight? What were your thoughts on his?
Well, I don't want to say that I didn't see any improvement in the guy. I mean, the guy got clipped. You know, he got hit by a dude that spars with, you know, all the murderers over at AKA. I mean, this guy trains with Cormier every day. You know, he's sparring with Cormier and guys like that. So, you know, he's seen it all. You know, guys have tried to take him down. Guys have tried to, you know, probably knock his head off. And you know, so for Cunningham, going in against a guy like this is tough, especially when you get hit right out the gate. There wasn't really much to see. It happened fast. He got hurt. His eye blew up, and he wasn't going to take any chances after that, you know. But when you think about what this show is and why you're here, he actually should have gone out to the middle of the octagon and went for it, tried to finish the fight, you know, because that eye is only getting worse every round. It's not going to get better. And you also run the risk of the ref stopping the fight. I thought for sure the ref was going to stop the fight in the third round, because there's no way you could see out of that eye in the third round. It's impossible. So I thought the fight was going to get stopped, and the thing you saw in Cunningham was no sense of urgency whatsoever to stop the fight. What you saw from Cunningham is he didn't want to get finished and he wanted to go the three rounds. And that's what happened. And, you know, the AKA kid couldn't stop him. And if you can't stop him, who are you going to stop in the UFC when you get in that position?
Dana, I don't think that there's much value in getting into like a ton of different hypotheticals, right? But one question I would have is that if some guy came on and he just had unstoppable wrestling, like, I mean, your lightweight champion has unstoppable wrestling. Yeah. Some might call him that he has a little bit one-dimensional, but he has an unstoppable gift.
Who, Habib?
If there's a guy out there like that, do you want him on this show if he's a wrestler?
So did you see Habib when he fought Edson Barboza?
Yeah, well, and I mean, I said I wasn't like making a direct comparison to the guy, but I'm just saying that there's like a very dominant wrestler, and that is how he wins. Is this the right show for him, or would you still value?
Sure, if you're a dominant wrestler. I didn't see dominance tonight. He dominated in the wrestling game. Never did he try to finish the fight. When he had positions that he could do, he didn't do. You know what I mean? He played it really safe tonight. He could put this kid wherever he wanted to wrestling, put him against the fence. He could move him down to the ground if he wanted to. He could have done more, but he didn't. So my thing is, I just got to see you for three rounds. You're a dominant wrestler, I get it. That's all I saw. What else do you got? What happens when you get into the UFC and you get against you're up against another dominant wrestler, and now you got to bang it out with this guy? I didn't see any of that. You know, I saw a guy who looked very one-dimensional, played it literally as safe as you could play it, and I didn't get to see anything. It's like, you know, when we were just talking about the Savage, you know, his corner didn't want him going to the ground. I know that this guy has 100% finish rate and wants to get him to the ground. So I would have had to wonder, I wonder what would have happened if they went to the ground. I wonder how that guy's ground game is. I didn't have to wonder. He showed me. So did Miguel. I saw everything. I saw the whole game. You know, you can, I'll give you an example. That kid could come on The Ultimate Fighter and win The Ultimate Fighter. But you can't get in here unless I see everything and see what you got. You know, or the big myth now, after last week, I'm looking for finishes. I'm not looking for finishes. Are great. Listen, if finishes happen, like if he came out and knocked him out in the first round, I still would have liked him as much as I, but I like that I got to see everything. Puna didn't finish, but I signed him. I saw a lot of things with him. His takedowns were strong. When he got the top position, he didn't stop punching, whether it was to the body or to the head. He was trying to finish the fight. I just saw a lot more out of him and a lot more potential.
Anything else?
Good?
Thanks, Dan.
All right, thanks, guys.
So there you have it, UFC President Dana White after Dana White's Contender Series. And you know, I know it's easy to pick on Dana, and I think sometimes it's almost unpopular to agree with him, but I kind of understand his perspective on what he's coming from, man. As I said, if this was the only way, if Dana White's Contender Series was the only way into the UFC, I would certainly take more umbrage, I guess, with his decision-making processes. But that's not what this is about. You know, this is about him picking his guys. You know, him putting his hand on the shoulders of a guy or girl and say, you're one of mine. You know, you're my guy. or my girl. You know, I mean, that's kind of what this is about. And you have to do certain things to do that. Kyle Dacus, I think, does have some skills, but did show that he was raw a little bit, you know, and need some time to develop, I think, and continue to get better. I mean, he should have been able to finish in some of the positions he was in. Justin Gonzalez, I thought, you know, showed some flaws, showed some holes. I think he should have been able to finish Zach Zane. And Tony Johnson. Tony Johnson had a rough go of it because Alton Cunningham, his eye was just – I can't believe that fight carried on, to be honest with you. If you haven't seen this, his eye blows up. Hematoma, right eye closed. My son was actually there, and he was sitting on press row with me, which was kind of cool. But he was like, dude, that's going to give me nightmares now. He's like, that's crazy looking. And so Cunningham, I'm sure he couldn't see out of that right eye, and I cannot believe the doctors allowed it to go on, to be honest with you. But he was basically just moving into the clinch and keeping the fight there. And Tony Johnson, a boxer, was trying to work in tight and show his skill. He definitely showed that he's got some power. He definitely showed that he's got some talent, but he just wasn't being given much room to work. So I felt kind of bad for Tony. It's, I guess part of it is you got to have a dance partner, right? I mean, you got to go in there and impress, but you know, if your opponent's not willing to try a little something, it makes it tough on you too. So I felt kind of bad for Tony in that regards. But I liked, you know, to be honest with you, I liked the selections. I liked the selections. No contender series next week, so I'm kind of bummed about that. And I know, I know our UK crew is bummed about it. Simon Head and Abby Subban are both going to be in town for International Fight Week. Simon Head will actually be working with us next week, so I'm sure we'll have him on the road show. Abby Subban is going to be on vacation, so I think he's bringing his girl with him as well, so we'll try not to make them work. We'll let them enjoy themselves a little bit. But I know they both wanted to check out the new facility, so I think it kind of – I think, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of traveling media that would have loved to come and check out. So I don't know. I guess USC decided there was just too much going on, basically, is what I was told, that they said, you know, this would be a good time to take a break. But I think it's kind of a bummer. I think a lot of the media that's traveling into Vegas, it would have been an opportunity for them to go check out the new facility. So I'm kind of bummed that they took a break. But it'll come back for the next 8 weeks, and we'll have all that covered. So let's talk about this week. UFC on ESPN3 is up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Minneapolis, by the way, cool town, man, especially during the summer. During the summer. It's been a long time since I've been there, but the times I was there, I remember really enjoying it. And thinking it's kind of an underrated scene. Now, during the winter, I don't know, not so much. But Matt Erickson is up there, so we've had coverage all week long on MMA Junkie. We'll have fight night coverage as well, which I will not be a part of. A rare UFC event that I am not working, but I am actually going to go over to the Thomas and Mack Center to call a Tough Enough event. So Tough Enough, Pack the Mac is this Saturday night if you're in Vegas. It's totally free. You get an opportunity to go see some top amateurs at the Thomas and Mack Center for free. Myself and Dave Farrar will be on the call. So looking forward to that. But I will be watching the fights, of course. We'll watch them via tape delay. Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos in the main event. Of course, everybody's got to be looking forward to that. I don't see how you can't be excited for this one. I hesitate to get too excited because the last time, you know, we thought we had a can't miss with Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis, we don't have to remind anybody how terrible that fight was. I don't think that's going to happen here. Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos, potentially a number one contender fight in the division, and stylistically looks like it should be a lot of fun. Definitely looking forward to that fight. Joseph Benavidez versus Jusser Formiga. Love that fight as well. I like the fact that, you know, it's a key matchup at flyweight. Of course, we played the audio from Joseph Benavidez last week, taking a very, very mature approach to this and kind of said, and I think he's right, man, the timing of Henry Cejudo being out, had this fight not been announced, this would have been a great interim flyweight title fight. And, you know, you can't just change stream midway, I guess, and, you know, suddenly make it a five-round fight and all that. But, yeah, I like this fight, man. It's a key matchup at flyweight, and I just like to see the flyweight fights are happening. I still don't know how committed U.S. President Dana White is to keeping the flyweight division around. I mean, yes, at that press conference in Chicago, he was like, "Yeah, we're keeping it, all right." But you know, I still don't know how, you know, until they start bringing people back into the mix and getting people back in the fold. You know, I guess that's when I'll believe that everything is really trending towards keeping it. So, but that's a big fight. But I got to be honest with you, the one that I think I'm most excited about is Damian Maia versus Anthony Rocco Martin. Stylistically, I think, you know, grappling-wise, this could be a lot of fun. Of course, you know, Damian Maia, phenomenal jiu-jitsu stylist. 41 years old, if you can believe that, man. He is getting up there, man, but he's still out there doing it. You know, he had the three-fight losing streak, but, I mean, the three-fight losing streak, Tyron Woodley, you know, the champ. Colby Covington, the interim champ. Kamaru Usman, the now champ. I mean, three decisions to the absolute, you know, three best guys right now in the division and fought to a decision with all three of them. So, he's still, Damian Maia, very, very effective. Of course, he showed that earlier this year when he bounced back with that impressive submission finish of Lyman Good, who, you know, is a man, just an absolute, you know, monster of a physical specimen and looked like he had the ability to make it a long night for Damian Maia. Maia was able to tap him out in the first round. So I like this. But, you know, Anthony Rocco Martin, meanwhile, is just a character. I don't see how you don't like him. I mean, the fact that he's embracing the name and then, you know, the streak that he's on right now, it's impressive. You know, it's like he's reinvented himself. And I'm really, really intrigued by this fight. So that's the people I wanted to hear from. You know, of course, we got to hear a little bit from Francis Ngannou last week. We heard from Joseph Benavidez as well. You know, they did some time at the UFCPI. But I was looking forward to hearing Maia and Anthony Rocco Martin. So courtesy of Matt Erickson, here are the media sessions. Not a ton of media up there in Minneapolis this week for the event. So these are not long sessions, but we'll start out with the old man, the 41-year-old Damian Maia.
You needed that win really badly earlier this year. Can you tell us a little bit about
a fight?
Yeah, of course.
You know what's something different, you know, the last fight, because I never been in that kind of situation with some loss in a row. That was the first time, but I think with all these years in the UFC, you know, I've been fighting since I was a kid. And I'm in the UFC for almost 12 years, and I think it helped me a lot with this experience. I don't know if it would happen like maybe 5, 6 years ago, I would have the same understanding and the same reaction. But actually, I was pretty surprised that I was calm and, you know, I could handle well the situation.
Is that the toughest stretch you've ever been through in terms of opponents consecutively,
yes,
that level of guy?
Yes. Yeah, I never lost more than two in a row, and that just a couple of times in my life that this happens. So, you know, it was pretty awkward for me because I'm a competitor, I like to win, and, you know, even if I lost for the three champions, you know, the two champions, the former champion, the champion, and the interim champion, still, you know, it's always, you know, as an athlete, you always want to win.
A little bit about Tony Martin and kind of what he brings to the table. I mean, you know how good you are on the ground. He's not bad down there either, right?
No,
I mean,
he's actually good on the ground, you know. He won many of his fights by submission. He has a momentum. He came for four wins. And, you know, every time I step inside the octagon, I know it will be a tough test. I never had an easy test. Even the quick fights never were easy. Because, you know, all the athletes are in so high level when they fight in the UFC that, you know, there's no easy fighters.
You said that he was a little bit surprised that he got the level of opponent that you are to be on this card. I mean, it seemed like he holds you in pretty high regard. Not surprising.
No, you know, I think he deserves, you know, he comes from four wins. And let's see what Saturday will bring to us.
What do you see this as being a fight about for you? And for him, it's the chance to climb higher up in rankings than he's ever been and beat a higher profile opponent than he's ever had. What's it about for you?
For me, it's all about keeping my, what I did for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, keep going and keep representing this martial art. And of course, I'm going to the end of my career, but I still training and loving the sport as much as I always did. and I'm still improving. I'm feeling physically, technically, and mentally more strong than ever.
Do you think about that, like going to the end of your career? Like, do you feel like you can see an end date up ahead, and you're thinking about how you want to end?
Yeah, I see, but right now, this week, I'm trying to don't talk too much about that because, you know, I have a pretty tough opponent ahead on Saturday, so I gotta focus on him.
I can probably ask you this question just about any time you fight. How much do you think your experience advantage plays a part in this fight?
I think what evolved in me the last years were the mindset. And I think that comes with experience, not just during the fight, but during the training camp and during your life. You start to understand better how to deal with the pressure and that is always there, you know, how to deal with fighting the UFC, you know, the biggest MMA organization in the world. So, you know, you're learning more and more and you get more experience, and that's helping with some tools that I can bring into the fight.
That was Damian Maia up there in Minneapolis, courtesy of Matt Erickson. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. By the way, I should say, if you like what you're hearing so far, make sure you do us a favor. Log into iTunes if you could. Leave us a rating. You know, we'd love to have 5 stars if we can. Leave us a rating there. And if you can, leave us some feedback as well. I love the customer reviews. You could be like a Deep Sea Ninja who said, I enjoy going on the road and sharing a few frosty beverages with my friends, MMA Junkie John and Cold Coffee. Full of great information, interviews are not boring, and it's a well-paced show. Been listening for years. Well, thank you, Deep Sea Ninja, for listening for years. I appreciate that. And thank you for taking the time to get in there. I know we're asking, everybody's busy. We're all busy. I know it, and you got enough stuff going on in your life already. But when you take the time to do that, it helps the algorithm, as they say, at iTunes. Helps us get a little bit more exposure. Helps it show up in search engines and all that good stuff. So if you could take the time to do it, I certainly would appreciate it. All right, but yeah, Damian Maia, listen, classy as always. Got some respect for Martin. You know, talked about the struggle that he had been through. Just always a class dude. Damian Maia, one of the nicest people. I mean, there's a lot of people in MMA that are among the nicest people ever. It's crazy how many cool, you know, good human beings are in the sport. But Damian Maia is up there among them, and you will struggle to find somebody that has anything bad to say about Damian Maia. But listen, I think this is going to be a test, and it's a guy that has become one of my favorites, man. A guy that has been toiling away for a long time and was just kind of anonymous, right? I mean, I don't think a lot of people, Tony Martin, you know what I mean? It's a John Morgan-esque name. It's a very common name, right? And in a deep and stacked division that he was in, tough, you know, to get any recognition. And now he's Anthony Rocco Martin. That one stands out a little bit more. And he's getting the results, man. He's putting the wins together, and he's becoming a force in the division. And I think he's somebody that could, you know, test Damian Maia here. And I'm excited to see it. But you know, if you go to the ground with Damian Maia, you risk getting tapped out. It's that simple. Damian Maia is that good at jiu-jitsu. So, yeah, I will say I'm actually very, very excited for this fight. So, let's hear from Mr. Rocco as well.
I know you wanted on this show pretty badly, man.
Yeah, this is the card.
What's it feel like now that it's here?
Oh, it feels awesome, man. This is exactly what I wanted. I asked for it. Got a lot tougher opponent than I really thought the UFC would give me. You know, I didn't think they'd give me someone ranked so high, a legend of the sport, but I'm really happy to bring him back home.
Talk about him as an opponent, man. I mean, like looking up and down on paper, I don't think you've fought anybody that good. Would you agree with that?
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, he's definitely a world-class fighter. He's the gatekeeper to the title, man. He's fought for the welterweight title. He fought the interim champ and the new champ. So he's definitely a gatekeeper for that title, and I'm planning on going to get it.
I mean, where does that put you with the win? I mean, we know, like, yeah, your last 10 fights or so or whatever it's been, like, you've just been tearing it up. But does a win over a guy like that just catapult you right into that, like, second or third spot, you think?
No, I mean, I think it definitely, you know, if I win in spectacular fashion, right, then I think I really am in the top, you know, top 10 easily. And, you know, I could be one fight away. I think I could be really being a contender fight after that. And I think I match up really well with a lot of the guys in the top 10, top 5 in the division.
What do you make of that open workout crowd? I mean, all those cheers, all those fans, that kind of hype you up?
Yeah, I mean, I get excited, man. I get a little amped up for sure. It's fun to be back. You know, I started here in Minnesota, so it's just to bring the UFC back here is huge. You know, it's just a opportunity for all the fans and everyone here in Minnesota to really get the show going.
What do you think about Damian as a person? A lot of people talk about like what a nice guy he is, and like it seems like everybody kind of loves him, and even the guys who have to beat him up don't really want to hurt him because everybody likes him.
Yeah, he's definitely a nice guy. But once you sign on that dotted line, I want to hurt you. Because I promise you that there's nothing in this world that I want to do more than win that on Saturday night. So no matter who it is standing across me, I'm planning on going there and hurt you, do whatever I can to win the fight. You know, and afterwards, you know, we can shake hands. But I'm not here to fight, to be happy with fighting Damian Maia. I'm here to beat Damian Maia, and that's the only reason why I'm here.
What's it like to prepare for a guy where everybody knows what he wants to do, but he's really good at it and has been able to do it to people who have prepared to stop it?
Yeah, the blueprint's easy, right? The blueprint's out there. You just got to make sure you're sharp, man. You got to make sure you stick to that and do not make any mistakes. Because one small mistake in those grappling exchanges is the end of the entire fight. So I'm going to be smart. And when I attack, I'm going to be deadly.
You know, I was reading a story where it was talking about, you know, your decision to go with the Anthony Rocker Martin. And it said that was something that Kayla had suggested to you. And I heard before, like at one of the post-fight remarks that you made, that was something she suggested to you. And I wonder, what's it like to be in a relationship with somebody who also is in this world? They know what you go through.
Yeah.
They've gone through the same things. What are the pros and cons of it?
No, I mean, I think there's a lot of pros. I see how hard Kayla works. You know, Kayla's probably the hardest worker I've ever met. You know, she's that girl that if she doesn't win in dominant fashion, she thinks she's lost the fight. And she's just one of those people where always striving to be better. You know, you're always looking to improve, you're always looking to better. So that's really pushed me in my game and really to try to evolve as a martial artist in every aspect of my life.
What about the cons, dude? I mean, like you both go through the same ups and downs and the same kind of heartbreaker of the sport.
No, I mean, like, she's still so new to the MMA world where I'm kind of like trying to teach her a lot of the ropes and a lot of the ins and outs of the sport and trying to create, you know, make her more of a student of the game. So I've been doing a lot of that. But honestly, you know, she opened my eyes to just this whole picture of your branding, right? Your branding, your image that people need to see you as. And really it's not, you know, the UFC especially, right? It's not so much, it's just winning. You know, you got to win and you got to sell your brand, you got to sell yourself. So that's been a big part of it.
Seems like it's going well.
It's going good, man, but winning does help. Winning does help.
What do you owe anything to kind of this current run that you're on? I mean, was it just the move to welterweight that kind of...
No, also, you know, I moved up to welterweight. I moved to American Top Team. I started with the new Muay Thai coach, Anderson Branca, you know, and he's really helped my game a lot. Mike Brown's a huge help. Obviously, Brock's always in my corner. It's just my time, man. It's just like I'm mentally and physically and everything is just really coming together at the right time.
All right, Anthony Rocco Martin, a big moment for him. And look, he's been on this upward trajectory. You know, a little chip on his shoulder as he does, as he's kind of made his way up the ranks. And this is a big moment for him, man. This is his moment to shine. I think this is what he's been working. This would be that signature win where you got to start respecting him a little bit. So, yeah, anxious to see that. Listen, not a ton of you know, huge names on the card outside of, you know, the featured fights, but I think could be some fun fights. Of course, the entire event, I believe, is on ESPN, prelims and main card. So good exposure for the UFC there. Nice to check out on a Saturday. Vince Michel versus Roosevelt Roberts could be a fun fight. Drew Dober versus Marco Polis Reyes, two guys I like to throw down there. Paul Craig, the Scottish man that's a little hard to understand sometimes and is the third round submission expert, never gives up, the latest submission in UFC history, but he's facing a very, very tough Fortis MMA product in Alonzo Minifield. So some good fights in there for sure. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Like I said, I'll be watching it via tape delay. But I will be watching it. Of course, we'll have full coverage, MMA Junkie. The rest of the crew will be working on Saturday night. Like I said, Matt Erickson is on site in Minneapolis. And then Dave Doyle, Steve Morocco, Mike Bond, Nolan King, will all be helping out as well, pitching in with coverage. So we'll have full coverage of MMA Junkie like we always do. Some other fights this weekend. Titan FC 55, LFA, Cage Warriors. So some big event for Cage Warriors. Simon Head will be covering that. Night of Champions. I think they've got, what, six title fights on there? So that's pretty crazy. That'll be on Fight Pass. And by the way, I should say, if you don't have time to watch everything, which I know you don't, we started doing a feature, which I like. It's called Fights Past. Cold Coffee doesn't like the title, but I thought it was a clever play. You know, it's fights on Fight Pass that have already happened and that you may have passed by. So Fights Past, you see? Little play on words there. Cold Coffee doesn't love it, but that's what we went with. Just two editions in the book so far, but check them out if you can. Find them on MMA Junkie. Just basically like getting you highlights from everything that's on Fight Pass. They're nice enough to they've licensed us the footage to do these little highlight videos because there's just so much content on Fight Pass, and you can't necessarily check it all out. The last weekend, the one from last week, featured a knockout in glory that is just sick. Cedric Doumbé. Just an incredibly sick knockout, man. Some good stuff. So it's got some grappling on there. You know, like we're covering everything's on Fight Pass. Muay Thai is on there. So we're boiling it down because, you know, you don't have time to watch everything, but we're getting you the ones that you should watch. So check out that feature if you haven't. It's something new we just started doing. It kind of highlights from around the world, lets you see some fun mixed martial arts stuff. So listen, one last piece of audio here, kind of a random one, but I wanted to share this. Longtime listeners of the show will know of a man named Fiasco Jones. And it's a name that comes with a little bit of controversy. His volume is one that rivals mine. And he gets a little shrill sometimes. And so some people love Fiasco Jones on the podcast. He does have some great insight and a lot of experience. Some people do not. He's a controversial figure in the MMA Roadshow history, but he has his own podcast now as well. And you say, well, what's that? It's called Far Off Topic, and it has absolutely nothing to do with mixed martial arts. It is, and I'll read you their description on iTunes. It is an ever-evolving discussion of obscure or otherwise unconsidered ideas that lie on the untamed outskirts of public attention. That is Far Off Topic with Fiasco Jones and Mr. Glasses. But I happen to be listening to it this week. Now, they talk about some stuff that I really don't know much about or happen to be into that much. But I like podcasts in the background as a little noise while I'm working, you know. And, you know, I got to support a friend in Fiasco Jones. But a UFC-related story did pop up. And it is one that involves Fiasco Jones. And it's not along the lines of the greatest story ever told. That is epic, once-in-a-lifetime type stuff. It is not that, but it is a pretty damn funny story that has to do with his employment with the UFC, and I got a kick out of it. So since he is a good friend, I'll just borrow this little piece of audio from Far Off Topic. This is listen to what happened recently to one Fiasco Jones.
The last real update, and this is pretty funny, if you're not me. So the UFC opened their brand new Apex Studio. It's just literally like across the street from the current office. It's a huge studio space where they now shoot the Contender Series, and potentially down the road they're going to shoot the new Ultimate Fighter there as well. Well, this Monday, which June 17th probably, was the grand opening, and I was there to shoot. Follow Dana around as he introduces or shows off the studio to the local media. And now picture for yourself. So we're going down this long hall. It literally just started the tour. And it's this long hallway. And on the side of the wall are the jerseys from every past Ultimate Fighter show. And they're all lined up there. And it's just it's a long-ass wall, too. So it looks pretty good. He references this. I'm standing in front of him walking backward. And so I turn, I pan to the wall, you know, and I get a shot there. And I kind of pan back to him. And I'm just, you know, walking. I walk backwards probably, you could say, professionally.
Right.
And I've been doing it for decades.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, as a videographer, cameraman, photographer, whatever you want to call yourself, you're often with your face in a lens, an eyepiece, and your peripheral vision is bad and you're walking backwards all the time.
Yes.
Okay.
All the time. And so you build up this kind of a sixth sense,
yep.
a spidey sense.
Yep.
And I have mostly never actually tripped or fallen or really even hit anything. Well, that all ended that day because unbeknownst to me, someone had placed a single stanchion, I guess pylon. It wasn't even extended. It was the actual like fabric. It wasn't even clipped to anything. It was just a single pylon.
What is that?
A stanchion. You know, like when you're like rope something off.
Oh,
public events or stuff like that. Or at the airport or wherever. So yeah, it's just that little pylon and just sitting there. And I walked straight into it backward.
Oh, God.
Not realizing it was there. I'm spinning around trying to catch my balance and roll my fucking ankle in front of probably two dozen or more people, including Dana White and the executive producer of the UFC.
That is so great.
Grinds to a fucking halt. Everyone's like, oh, God. My shoe, I guess, jettisoned off. And Dana actually is the one that like went and grabbed it. He's like, here, man, here's your shoe. I'm like, oh, he's like, you're all right. I'm like, fine. As I limp away already, my foot's swelling up. I can't stand it. I can't put any pressure on it. And yeah, so I had to call someone in and said, hey, you need to finish this tour because I can't walk anymore.
Oh my God.
I've been recovering from that now.
That's
just busted up ankle. Yeah, it was fun.
That's so good.
Humbling. It was a humbling
experience. It is a humbling experience.
All right, that was Fiasco Jones. Man, I was surprised to hear that story. That was pretty funny. We did a media tour on Tuesday of last week of that UFC Apex. So they did one on Monday for local media as well. And that's the one that he was at. So I hadn't heard the story, so it was kind of funny just to hear it out of the blue. And hear him telling that. So I appreciate him letting me share that. But our good friend Fiasco Jones. All right, listen. Next week is UFC 239 International Fight Week. It's a big card. You know, it's crazy because it's not like before where we had, you know, man, guy, at one point there was three fight cards in a row, which was, I love MMA. And I could go watch three fight cards in a row. I could watch a fight card every night. But when you're talking about working it and the associated weigh-ins and the associated media days and all that and just loading them on top of each other, dude, those weeks were exhausting. So it is International Fight Week. It is a big week, but it's not as crazy as it used to be. But I am excited. You know, like I said, we'll have Simon Head in town. We'll have Abby Saban in town as well. So I'm sure we'll have some fun next week. But it is a loaded card, and it's so loaded that they took the main card and brought him in town early. Earlier this week we were in LA. The entire main card was there except for Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold was not there. I believe he had some prior commitments. But Jan Blachowicz was there, his opponent, and then Jan basically stayed in town. He's setting up and doing the rest of his camp in Vegas at the PI. Same thing for Amanda Nunes, Thiago Mejia Santos. They basically just stayed in town and set up their camp over at the PI. So. Anyway, I bring all this up. So they brought everybody to LA, and we got full coverage. All that's on MMA Junkie and the YouTube channel as well if you want to see the videos. But the one I had to share, Diego Sanchez. Anytime you can get Diego Sanchez talking, you got to sit back and enjoy the ride, man. Diego was in fine form as always, and it was funny to see because this was the very end of the media session, and as it's going. Chris Costello from the UFC PR department is trying to get him to stop, but doesn't want to be rude and doesn't want to interrupt him. But everybody's waiting because they're all doing face-offs. And so, you know, he was trying to find the right spot to jump in and stop so he could end the session. But it is hard to stop Diego Sanchez. The man is something special. Well, let's just hear it. I mean, this is great because there's hardly any questions. Now, there ended up being some news out of this. I'm sure you probably saw the headlines. That Diego decided to part ways with Jackson Wink. And so that really became kind of the newsworthy part of this. But I figured you just want to hear the whole thing because Diego is one of a kind, man. I appreciate what he brings to the game. He is going to be sorely, sorely missed when he decides to hang it up. So here was the conversation from Los Angeles earlier this week with Diego Sanchez. Or, I guess if we want to be more accurate, because he is emphasizing the proper way Diego Sanchez. Well, Diego, how about Diego Sanchez, UFC Hall of Famer, man? Give me an idea what that means to you coming into this fight.
You know, I just keep on doing what I do, doing my job, working for the company, fighting anybody they put in front of me, you know, keep believing in myself. I will admit, I got lost there for a good 6-7 years where, you know, I didn't, you know, I did what I thought you're supposed to do in life. I thought that's what you do when you get into your 30s. You settle down, you marry a woman, you have a kid, and, you know, that's life, you know, like, but for me, you know, I didn't marry the right woman, first of all, but it's just like this, you know, you got to be authentic, you got to be you, and I'm not against marriage, but I'm just like, people out there, make sure that person, like, really loves you for 100% who you are. If you're a freaking weirdo, like, they better be, like, loving your weird shit that you do, like, if you're, like, you're not being like, oh, man, this guy's bipolar, he's crazy, you know, like, no, that person needs to be just as crazy as you and balance and equal each other out, but now I'm here, I'm still here, you know, they couldn't kick me off the shelf, they couldn't get me off, they couldn't get that dusty ass book, I just had to get that book, all right, there's some experience in that book, flip it open, all right, halfway through the book, okay, yeah, all right, getting to the words, you know, getting a little towards the end of the book, all right, it's getting better, all right. This is a good story. This is kind of like that Cinderella Man movie, man. That Diego Sanchez, he's coming back. Oh, isn't he too old? Nah, he's doing it, isn't he? Nah, Randy did it at 45. Diego Sanchez could do it at 36, 37, whatever he is.
What chapter do you think we're on in the Diego book right now?
Oh, that book. It's got to be chapter probably 37. 37.
You're going to the Hall of Fame for a fight. Do you think, based on your individual stats, you're able to Hall of Fame in the future, just with Diego Sanchez alone?
You know what? That's not the call for me to make, and nor would it be the time to make that decision, because I'm still fighting, and I love what I do, what I'm doing, and I feel I have a lot more left in me. People ask me, when are you going to hang it up? I'm 37 years old right now, and people are asking, the question that I get asked the most is, how many more you got left in you, Sanchez? How many more you got in you? Like I know, I'm gonna fight as long as I can. That's all I know. I love to fight, and as long as I can keep beating these 20-year-old men that they keep throwing in there with me, this will be the third in a row. And I'm here to be the greatest of all time, and that's what I'm striving for, to always learn, adapt, and evolve, and that's what I've been doing for the longest time. And even 3 weeks before this, I made a crucial decision. This is a Diego Sanchez moment. I made a crucial decision. It's 3 weeks before the fight. No more JW, Jackson Wink, one of the best teams in the world. No, I'm going in with one trainer. And people are like, wow, what the hell, Diego? What are you thinking? Well, I'm not only thinking, I'm feeling. And that's a big part of Diego Sanchez, is I don't think too much. I don't think it's good to think too much. I think you gotta feel. You gotta feel this down here. This is your gut. And this is the universe right here that's inside of you. And me and my universe, and that universe, we won. We very connected. And I'm flowing with the punches, and I'm going with the flow. All I know is that I wasn't learning. I wasn't growing as a mixed martial artist, that they were teaching me what the knowledge and the information as trainers, the job that they were doing. They just were basically going through the motions with Diego Sanchez. And
so was there anything in particular that led you to believe that, or was it just an overall feeling that's been kind of lurking?
No, for the past 3 years, you know, Diego Sanchez really been doing it the Bruce Lee type of style training, you know, going in the gym early, getting my thousands of reps in and training myself, you know, training myself in speed, training myself. You know, I'm obviously everybody knows my grappling credentials, you know, getting some grappling classes in, you know, grappling roles in, go get my rounds in with the young bucks and do my thing in the gym. But, you know, it would come fight time and get a couple mitt sessions with Winkle John. Never really learning anything, just kind of just tuning up what I already had, you know. And with Greg Jackson, you know, it was, you know, maybe one or two privates a camp, you know, but never really any true love. You know, the type of love that a trainer should have for his fighter is to go back and watch all of the old Diego fights. Let's get a piece of paper. Let's see, where's he getting hit? Where's he getting hurt? What's he doing wrong? All right, we need to fix that. We need to fix that because that's a problem. This is causing him to lose. All right, we need to fix that, and we need to. Okay, where is he doing good stuff? All right, let's put that down. All right, well, how can we make that even better? All right, let's make this even better. Let's work on this. Let's work on this so we can get Diego Sanchez to win, the best that we can get Diego Sanchez to be. And so that was what wasn't happening. All right, that wasn't happening. I wasn't getting the love. And but nothing but respect for Winkle John and Greg. I love those guys. Like I am grateful, and I express a huge amount of gratitude right now to both Mike Winklejohn, to Greg Jackson's, Jackson's MMA, everything, all the way up, all the training partners that came in that room that helped me become the man that I am right now, I appreciate. And it's just, for this time in my career, there was no focus on Diego Sanchez. There was no real love on Diego Sanchez. Maybe it's because we got two belts here. We got two belt fights, John and Holly. But you know what? I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit. I'm Diego Sanchez. I am special. I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm finishing a 32-fight contract with UFC. 32 fights. Man, I'm all chips in. I got all the chips in on this fight. I'm all in. I'm throwing everything, throwing my house on there, and they're throwing the house in there, throw everything in there. I ain't coming to lose, I'm coming to win. And my team is not gonna put forth the effort, the time, the love, and the energy, I'm gonna make a change. And that's exactly what happened, is the universe brought me Josh Fabia right at the right time, because I work with Josh 10 days in secret, the last 10 days before my last fight with Mickey Gall. We work 10 days in secret every night at my house. We stay up till 2 in the morning working on movement, working on vision, working on mind. He's a mind coach. He's a breathing coach. He's a strength and conditioning coach. He's a real true customado, man. He breaks it all down. He sends me video. We film every session. We watch every session. It's a true perfectionist, putting in that perfection to make me the perfect fighter. And so it's been real easy because I had a lot of tools. I had a lot of tools in my toolbox already. All I had to do was just analyze all those tools, reorganize all those tools, put them where they needed to be. Some of those tools needed to be sharpened. Some of those tools needed to be freaking scrapped. Throw that tool in the trash. No more. Don't use that no more. That's not good for you, Diego. Why are you gonna stand in this space? Why are you gonna be here? No, that's not good for you, Diego. You got short arms, short legs. Why are you gonna be in that space? You gotta be here like Tyson. You gotta be in. You know, you gotta be in on the legs and on the hips. And so, you know, it's real talk, man. And I have found a new trainer, and he's a little Jedi. I'll tell you this. He is a college level wrestling. and this man went to the Green Beret. The Army Rangers. He did the Army Rangers, and he did contract work. And the guy is a real freaking Jedi. I would not be bullshitting. If you think I trained with all the greats. All right, I trained with a lot of greats. Don't forget that I went to San Diego and I lived in San Diego for a while. I trained with the Cali scene. You know, I rolled with the best of the best. I had Salo and Sanji and Jacare. I've rolled with the best of them. Bob Anderson, Olympic wrestling coach. I've had all these Olympic wrestling coaches. I've had all these different coaches just in the search for the knowledge. And this guy's the real deal, man, and I know because he could hurt me. And if a man that weighs 130 pounds and that's 5'2", could really hurt me and probably hospitalize me in the hospital, that's the kind of guy I want to be training and learning from.
One of a kind, man. Diego Sanchez. Like I said, it was the visual, and it's up on MMA Junkie and the YouTube channel if you want to see it. But the visual of, you know, Chris Costello wanting to stop this, but not wanting to be rude, and kind of like slowly inching in, and finally, you know, when he gets a pause in the action, just kind of waving it off. It was something to see. So excited for that. Excited to listen. I mean, that's a big fight though, Michael Chiesa. Looking forward to talking to him next week. I didn't get to talk to him. Dave Doyle did talk to him. I ran out of time. It was hard to get everybody at once. But I actually saw Chiesa the other night at the Contender Series and said, John, you owe me a damn interview. So we'll definitely do an interview on Fight Week. All right, listen. I will pack things up here and turn them over to Cold Coffee. Like I said, shout out to Cold Coffee for taking some time, even though he's on vacation, to edit this all together and put it out. Means the world. Thank you. That's how we've done 222 consecutive weeks. Never missed an episode. Come on. Gotta give us some respect for that, man. I take pride. That's a streak right there, man. That is a streak. A streak of talking. Okay, it's not really that impressive, I guess. But come on. We've delivered every damn week, even when we got other things going on. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Cold Coffee. And, of course, I appreciate all you out there. Thanks for listening.